Welcome home. We are WNST. Dallas and Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively in Ocean City, Maryland. We're on the Coastal Highway. We're at Fish Pal Convention Center. I like saying Fish Pal because I knew fish. Gold Rush Sevens Doublers. We got these to give away next Friday. It's our last batch. We're going to be at Fadley's at Lexington Market. All of it brought to you by Liberty Pure Solutions as well as Jiffy Lube. Luke's going to be coming down to join us. I have other celebrities, dignitaries, fun people joining us. Senator Ben Cardin's going to join us down here at Mako as well as Chris Van Hollen. We've had so many great guests. Next Friday, we get the Crab Cake Tour going again. Mark Viviano will join us on the 4th at Coco's, the newly retired Mark Viviano. We're finally going to have a real conversation with Viv. And then we do 26 oysters in 26 days in 26 ways all around the bay. All that's brought to you by the Maryland Lottery as well. This is one of my defending champions. I do remember the first time I reached Emily Keller, former mayor of Hagerstown, now our drug czar here in the state of Maryland. She was real chippy and mouthy on Twitter. I know you find it's hard to believe that when you were a young politician. And I'm like, who's this feisty woman who's the mayor of... I went into my wife. I'm like, I'm going to email her, and she's going to come on a show. And then I emailed you, and you're like... And you have this Pittsburgh accent, which I love. And you didn't know me from Boo, and you came on and did the show. And I think we were talking about opioid addiction. I believe that was the topic and the subject matter of... And maybe Trump was running the country and saying stupid stuff, and that pissed you off. I don't know what it was. But then I got to know you a little bit. And over the last couple of years here at Mako, you're one of my all-time favorites. And clearly one of Wes Moore's favorites, too, because he boomed you up and out of Hagerstown, where you don't get Crumpy's Donuts after 7 p.m. anymore. But you still live in Hagerstown, right?
I do. 3 blocks from Crumpy's. So I still get Crumpy's.
How Donuts. Often do you go up there and indulge in this? Not too often, I hope.
No. No, I had to make a promise to myself when I bought the house that I would not go there every single night because it's very easy to walk.
Well, can you smell them?
When I run or walk, yes. Yes.
This is, I don't want to pimp it too much because people, you're going to tell them all the reasons they need to come to Hagerstown and the new baseball team and like all that stuff. You'll give me all of that. But I went to Hagerstown on the Crab Cake Tour, and I had a recommendation to go to Rick's and get a crab cake. And Rick was crazy as it came advertised. He was crazy, and the crab cake was delicious. But then I think I met you around that period of time, and I think you told me I should go to Crumpy's, or somebody told me about Crumpy's. And I Googled it, and the hours on it said 7 p.m., opens at 7 p.m. I said, Jen, there's a typo. It's got to be a Google typo that this donut shop would open at 7 o'clock at night. It is the most unique place. They serve donuts out of a back alley in this neighborhood that looks like, for anybody in Baltimore, it looks like Parkville, like regular, you know, kind of houses. But you have to go to the alley, and there's signs for it. And then you go down the alley.
It's Donut Alley. And it's literally Donut Alley. That's the name of it.
It's Hagerstown, right? So I'm already giving people the joys of Hagerstown. So you go down this alley, and then you just see brake lights the whole way if you're not there at 6:55.
Yeah.
Show up at 8:30.
Yeah.
Hagerstown's cool. It's unique.
It is a very cool place.
Are you – you're yes. a native. Did you born, raised, the whole deal?
Yep, born and raised. South High Rebel. Rebel with a cause here.
All right. Well, tell me about the baseball thing because I want to give you all the love and the credit and all this. I gave her a hard time last night. We were out socializing. I said, yeah, I know. I see that baseball thing, and you're not the mayor anymore, but I have a feeling that the baseball thing – because, I mean, if you're an Oriole fan, you're seeing the ads, right?
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people were like me. I had never been to Hagerstown in my life before I knew you. I mean, I never jumped off the road except maybe to pee, get gas. I did go to the Hagerstown Royal Farms to get fried chicken 3 weeks ago when I drove through. But, you know, Hagerstown's one of those places that maybe people haven't appreciated. And when I did get off the road, I saw all the things that you talked about with issues with a small community and all that. But I saw this beautiful park that we drove through.
Yes.
And I know I commented to you. I'm like, that's a beautiful space. And now you've even augmented it even more.
Yeah, Hagerstown, I think, is so underrated, but right now I truly feel like it's Hagerstown's renaissance. You know, there's 45,000 people there. It's bigger than people think. It's the sixth largest municipality in Maryland, and they just opened a $100 million baseball stadium for the Hagerstown Flying Boxcars. And
why Flying Boxcars?
So the Boxcars, it's a plane that was made in Hagerstown.
Okay.
At Fairchild, yeah. So one of the unique names, like the Savannah Bananas and all the other like niche names.
Flying Boxcars.
Flying Boxcars. That's the name. The city itself, under this administration, is building a 114,000 square foot indoor turf facility. So there'll be two full size turf courts, six hard courts, a gym, a restaurant, a play area for kids, and they're cutting the ribbon on it in January. And so, those are two massive projects that one is finished, one is being completed, and just everything around there, a lot of development. It's just a really, really good time for Hagerstown.
Well, I think when I met you a couple years ago, and you're mouthy on the internet, and you're the mayor of Hagerstown, former insurance gal, and you've told your story about your dear friend who you lost her life and opioid addiction and your role in all that, and we'll get to that in a minute, but I thought, like, you might be the mayor of Hagerstown for the next couple, three, you know, like a little while. And then you get tapped on that. Because I don't think you aspired to, like, greater heights or meeting the president or any of that stuff. But I think you wanted to be the mayor of Hagerstown. That was, like, what you wanted to do, right?
I did. I wanted to help people who use drugs. Like, that was it. That was why I ran. I wanted to help people who use drugs and provide resources and figure out a way that...
Because it was eating your community up.
It was eating my community up. It's eating our nation up. And I thought, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm complaining on the sidelines, so I can sit here and complain and yell and scream and stomp my feet, or I can try to do something about it. So that's the only reason I got into politics.
And you wonder why she's one of my favorites. So, you know, but you're not an elected anymore, right? You're not an appointee.
Yes.
You told the story a little bit last year, but I want you to tell it again this year and maybe the year since last time I saw your hat. It's been a year since I've had you on the show. I got to come get an oyster with you or something like that in Annapolis.
Yes.
You're working or whatever. But you took this gig last year, and you were talking about Joe Biden and Westmore. You became sort of a Johnny Bravo star for the Democrats in the state in taking over. But more than that, you know, you're not in a really Democratic area. When I'm out in Hagerstown, it's Trumplandia. You know, the fact that you got elected and got is the person who replaced you, is that a Democrat or Republican?
She is a Democrat.
She is a Democrat.
Well,
okay.
Yes.
But it's hard for Democrats to get elected in Washington County, right?
It is. The city of Hagerstown is pretty Democratic, like 2-1. But the surrounding county is very, very red. Very red.
Right. And I would think that creates all sorts of friction in getting things done.
Yes,
but for you to be looked at by Westmore, somebody that can get something done all around the state, based on what you were doing in Hagerstown, that's just so important. And cornbread's going to come on, and the Eastern Shore's same problems Hagerstown has. The problems that get maybe racially in some ways sort of blown up by the Fox 45s of the world, that only Baltimore has a problem, that is fiction. It's straight fiction.
Yes, it is. The problem is everywhere. Everyone is suffering. We've all been through trauma. You never know. Like, and I think that's where the stigma comes in place, because we look at people who use drugs and think, oh, it can only be from this area or this demographic, and it's just not true.
Or it's a weakness.
Yes, and that's absolutely not true. You don't know what led that person to make that decision. I said this earlier on Aaron's show. No one writes in their diary when they're a kid, "Dear diary, I want to have a substance use disorder when I get older." You know, like, no one aspires to do that. You don't know what led that person down that path. And if we just started treating people with dignity and respect and recognizing that they're struggling with a disease just like someone that has any other disease, we will make great strides.
Well, I think you look at the window and say, that's just a junkie. No,
yeah.
that's a human tragedy right out our window.
That's
that
somebody's mother or daughter or, you know, son, uncle. It's somebody's best friend. Like, it was mine. That's somebody. It's not just, you know, someone that deserves less respect than anyone else.
What do you do every day? What is your... Emily Keller, former mayor of Hagerstown, now the opioid czarina. I can't call you czar because you're not male. But what is your title and what's your... When Governor Moore comes to you and says, I want you to do this, what is the this that leads to the that from an appointed position that I'm thinking didn't exist 10 years ago, 15 years ago, right?
It did not. This is the first time that there's been a special secretary. So my title is Special Secretary of Overdose Response, and I oversee Maryland's Office of Overdose Response, which was kind of reformed under Governor Moore. There's never been a cabinet member that was specific for substance use disorder before Governor Moore. So he appointed me into this position. Our office actually like collaborates with all of the state agencies and all of the jurisdictions to make sure we're all singing from the same sheet of music, if you will. And we're creating the collaboration plan for the state. The state
so you're literally
plan.
Doing a blueprint for what this job is.
Yeah. Because
this job didn't exist and it's now, well, exist, and we're going to take care of this, that, and the other, but maybe we should have this and some other. What have you learned in the first year? Like, what's really important about starting an agency from dreamland? But I would think there's other places in the country that are doing this well. I mean, yeah, all of these things can be borrowed, if not stolen from, right?
Absolutely. I think one of the things I've learned that really strikes me was last September we did a town hall series, and we went to every single jurisdiction, all 23 counties in Baltimore City. And we met with the health departments, the treatment centers, the hospitals,
police,
the PDs, yes, the fire departments. And then we had a public town hall in every county. So people could come in, share their stories, tell us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what they need. And
it is amazing. It involves police, doctors. It involves
everyone. Housing, food, you know, everything.
Kids, schools, all, yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
Well, both my parents had alcohol problems, you know. We didn't look at it as like, oh, it was different. I mean, it wasn't even as frowned upon to be a drunk as it was to be a junkie, right? Like, it's a whole different thing of quitting on them. Everybody knew about Alcohol Anonymous or whatever, but narcotics, illegal. There's just such a stigma about it.
And that's a stigma we need to get over, because we don't look at alcohol use disorder at the same. And it's the second leading cause of overdose death in the state of Maryland, alcohol is.
Not to mention drunk driving and just all everything else, the violence,
everything
goes into it, sure.
But we don't look at it the same. The same as way, you know, we don't look at someone who has lung cancer because they smoke cigarettes their whole life and look down on them. I mean, it's a disease. Addiction is a disease. I think what we learned going across the state was it's everywhere and the problems are the same. Like, you would think Garrett County would be significantly different than Baltimore City. But that's not the case. I mean, they have some varying issues.
And they all have access to the drugs in sort of an equal sort of way, right?
Yeah.
The fact that the drugs are available is probably, and then fentanyl, right? That's a whole different level of killing people.
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's in everything. Fentanyl is in pretty much every single drug you use now. Cocaine with fentanyl is increasing in deaths here in the state of Maryland. 55 and older, as far as age, is one of the leading age groups that are dying from overdose. 55 and older. And I think that people hear that when we would be at town halls and you would hear people gasp, because everyone has this mental picture of what someone with a substance use disorder looks like. And 55 and older, isn't it?
I'm 55, right? So, like, that hits home, right?
Yeah.
Well, Emily Keller's our guest. She's in Annapolis doing the good work. So you do this tour, and where is the agency now that it wasn't a year ago in implementation of dreams, goals, and money? I mean, money was put behind this for you, your salary, your staff, all this, and then getting out into the field to get success stories, I guess. You come back to me and say, hey, we know this is working. This is getting better. Because that's one thing I had Odette here. You know, when the murder rate goes down in Baltimore, the oxygen comes out. You know, everything breathes a little bit better.
Yes.
When that happens, I would think for your number, all of these counties, all these jurisdictions, if you can show 5 years from now that you've done something, that would really be, that's why you're here. It's why you're doing this.
Absolutely. Less people die. That's the goal, right?
Sure.
I would love to see it be zero. There has been a decrease from 2022 to 2023 in overdose deaths by about 2.7% so far with preliminary numbers. So the numbers are going down. What we're working on right now is that coordination plan. So we can go to the Department of Labor and say, hey, we need help making jobs that are recovery friendly. We can go to the Department of Behavioral Health and say, hey, we need more mental health resources here. How can we collaborate better? And then we work with all the jurisdictions to say, what are you doing? What are you missing? And here's best practices from other jurisdictions. Can you implement them?
I would think, just, and this doesn't speak to Hagerstown as much as it does to Western Maryland or the Eastern Shore or less populated places. I've done a lot of work with the Hospital Association over the years to learn about hospitals and certainly during COVID, their breaking point and the stress point and all of that. But opioid addiction to a small hospital in Garrett County or in Charles, in more suburban places, to have staff to be equipped to deal with the, I mean, they're dealing with it every day, right? I mean, it's as much as like in Baltimore you perceive shootings to be something every hospital deals with. I would think in all of these places, is there an overwhelm in the way COVID where they have more too many patients to deal with or resources to deal with individual patients? Because I know by their very nature, the hospitals are smaller in those places, you know, and less resources.
Yeah, emergency departments were overwhelmed for a while. And I think most of them would still say the same thing, but it's
that's a straight overdose, better. Right? Like, that's the worst of the worst. I'm talking about what happens before you get to that level, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now there's so many treatment centers and crisis centers. There's the state is putting a ton of money into crisis centers. So someone who's in crisis, whether it be substance use disorder, mental health, whatever that crisis is, has a place that they can walk into. There was a lot of money put into 988. So now someone, if you're struggling, if you know someone who's struggling, if you don't know what to do, you can call 988 and be provided resources. And that has really taken some of the burden off of emergency departments in the hospitals.
Well, it should also equal less overdoses and less deaths, which is the goal of all of this, right?
We hear that all the time.
Prevention, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we hear it all the time. If someone comes and says, I just found out my son is using fentanyl, I have no idea what to do. Well, now you can call this number and they'll help you.
What do people need to know about fentanyl? Because, I mean, I don't know enough about it. I just know it can kill you. And I don't, you know, I'm not on the black market using this, but it would be the number one fear. I mean, I was walking down the street in New York, like during the plague 2 years ago, and they're just selling weed out on, you know, like literally out of trucks on the streets in New York, and you smell it, whatever. A guy offers you weed, and I'm thinking, ain't no way. And, you know, I'm cannabis sponsored, but curious. I think one of the things about cannabis and the opioid thing is just sort of, I know where it's being grown from. I know it's, you know, it's regulated now, like the lottery's regulated and gambling. There's something about that, but like, I saw it on the street, and I'm thinking, there's no way, but people are doing this every day on the black market, and that's how they're dying, right? I mean, literally.
I mean, fentanyl's and everything. I think one of the big misconceptions is, so we have a program called the Rapid Analysis of Drugs here in Maryland, where people who use health department syringe service programs provide, like, their syringes, their used syringes, their baggies, their pipes, and
so you can see the residue, right?
Yes, yeah. And we can test it real time. So we know what is in our illicit drug market in real time, which is very convenient because then we can tailor outreach efforts to accommodate that. The misconception is people think they're still using heroin. There's less than 2%. Heroin is in less than 2% of our drug supply. Like, heroin is pretty much non-existent anymore. It is all fentanyl.
They're just calling it heroin.
Yeah.
It gets you high. You don't know the difference.
Yeah.
You're high. You think you got heroin, but you don't.
You don't. You have fentanyl. And it's significantly more potent, and like I said, now it's being mixed with cocaine. So people who have been habitual, like party drug users, I mean, let's be realistic here, some people use cocaine. College students, you need to stay up all night, write a paper, they might use cocaine. It's no longer cocaine. A lot of times it has fentanyl in it, so we're seeing an increase in overdoses and overdose deaths with people. But for the overdoses, when they survive, they thought they were genuinely using cocaine. And it had fentanyl in it. So it's very scary. It's very scary. There's also a lot of misconceptions, which is why we want everyone to have naloxone. Most people know it as Narcan. That's a brand name. But that can reverse an overdose death. And we want everyone to carry it. Some people are scared because they think if that person has fentanyl residue on them and they come in contact with them, that they could overdose. That is a misconception.
It's a myth.
Yeah. It is. It's a myth. So we're really trying to push that message. My team has like a PSA out on our website about it. Like, don't be scared to carry naloxone, and don't be scared to administer it if you come across someone who's overdosing, because you could be their lifesaver.
Well, we've done a lot of heavy talk here from Hagerstown. Emily Keller's here. She's trying to make the state better from out in Hagerstown, making Crumpies better and get me donuts. let's get to the important thing here. The Washington football team.
My Commanders. My Commanders.
Why? I've given you so... You would look so much prettier in purple. Yeah, nobody looks good in that burgundy and gold, you know? But it is interesting being in Hagerstown, because most of your people up there are probably Steelers people. When, you know, like...
They are.
Yeah, it's just I see it as Steelers country up there.
Yeah,
yins and not.
Listen, I don't root against the Ravens. So I go to Ravens games. I root against the Ravens when they're playing the Commanders. But when it gets to the playoffs, if it's not us and
it's never
not, it's not normally us,
right?
Then I become a Ravens fan because I would never root against Maryland. But my heart and soul are the Commanders. I have screamed. I've cried. I've paid thousands of dollars to go see them. Half of my closet.
How do you feel about
like
new ownership?
I'm excited about it. We needed it.
Did you ever quit on? I mean. I've been treated like garbage by Angelos. It's clear. Obviously, Bisciotti's treated me like garbage after I spent millions of dollars on tickets. But there's a thing about Snyder being like a different level of pariah. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in talking about it, I have, and I don't like to admit this, but I had some former Redskins fans in my life. They quit on him. I mean, you know, a couple of my friends, and I'm talking guys that wore their headdresses and Joe Gibbs and John Riggin, like all like lifer fans 10 years ago when they went to every game. And some of my best friends in the world, they just stopped. They just like, and everybody stopped. The stadium was empty, right? You never stopped?
I never stopped. I grew up in that. I mean, I watched football Sundays with my dad every Sunday. And my mom, I mean,
was
I
was he a
had,
Washington fan? Is that how it happened?
He was.
Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah. I knew the fight song. I had like pom-poms and a helmet and a football. I mean, it's just like in me. It was very strange singing Hail to the Commanders the first time.
You know why I know that song? And this is going to be a sad story. I'm going to drop the mic and we'll go have a crab together later on. But my football team left in the middle of the night in a Mayflower van when I was 17 years old.
I have heard
this
story.
You young people don't know about this.
I wasn't alive, but I know
right,
about
it. It's all written. What year were you born?
86.
Yeah, all right. You don't know from anything. So I got socks older than you, young lady. But the Colts left, and when that happened, you have to understand this. You're in Hagerstown. You're probably getting Steelers games all the time anyway. But we didn't have a team anymore. And what they would do is they blacked out everything. We would only get the Joe Gibbs, Washington, Burgundy, and Gold team on beginning in 84, 5, 6, 7, 8. So we wind up missing really big games, good games. The Giants be playing the 49ers, and we'd have live from Tempe, the 0-29 Arizona Cardinals taking on the Washington Redskins. So we dealt with the Redskins being shoved down our throats. They made Baltimore a Washington market. No! So that would really speak to the why most of us Ravens fans really have a disdain for the Washington football team and really got off on how awful Dan Snyder really was and how long it lasted. I mean, it's appalling what he did. Like, it's really appalling.
Yeah, I used to always say they make it hard to love. And I'd say, even if they went 0-16, I'd still love them. But they tested that.
But is it becoming easier for you? I mean, like, as an Oriole fan with new ownership, there is a breath of difference. You feel different about it. Are you watching the games differently now? With a little more hope, maybe?
Yeah. But I've always been hopeful. Really.
But I can't take it away from you. I mean, you're clear. I mean, I've tried for a couple of years. That you're pretty hardcore.
Oh, I am hardcore.
You're hardcore.
Yeah.
Are you the only Washington football fan you know in Hagerstown? I mean, are there other... Or is it Ravens Steelers and you're just an outlier?
No, there's Commander fans.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm raising one. I mean, she had no choice. She had no choice in this
poor
matter.
Poor kid's going to lose all her life,
I got her a custom jersey as soon as they changed the team name with her last name on it. I'm like, here.
Are you happy with Commanders as a name? It's weird. It still doesn't roll off my tongue.
I would have gone with the Red Hogs because the Hogs, the line.
Right.
But it's copyrighted, so they couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been my first choice because we've always been the Hogs.
Look, anybody that served the world to screw Dan Snyder before he could screw them, good for them. They're not making any money off of it, but they got it, so nonetheless. Well, listen, anything we can do to help you in Baltimore? You spend most of your time in Annapolis, or I mean, you're back and forth? Or
back and forth all over the place.
You're really all over the state now, right?
Yeah. I still live in Hagerstown.
Next initiative, anything? Just the Narcan, that's probably the big message that you're – try your PSAs are about that, right? Just don't be afraid of people who've overdosed. Help them, right?
Yes.
Help people.
Yeah, for sure. That's a big initiative. Implementing some of the things from the Racial and Overdose Task Force that we're looking to eliminate disparities in overdoses. And then September is Recovery Month, and we are going all over the state to celebrate people in recovery and show that it is real.
Well, let's have an oyster while we celebrate recovery, all right?
Yes.
I'll celebrate football season, celebrate the Orioles going to the playoffs. Emily Keller is helping us down in Annapolis. She is the special secretary.
Overdose response.
Overdose response. All right, let's make sure I get that right. I call her the Czar Queen, and she's doing good things. Always good to see her. Always good to see all the folks down here. Cornbread's going to be joining me on Friday. Senator Van Hollen, Senator Cardin, talking about the end of his term. John Sarbanes is coming soon. Johnny O stopping by.
Nice.
I'm trying to think of who else is even coming by here. Lots of fun people. We're going to be here down here in Ocean City doing the MACO thing, the Maryland Conference, Counties Conference, where we get really good crab cakes, get to meet some fun people, and get to, from my wife's standpoint, she gets to come down and watch me in a convention hall while she gets to go out and have fun on the beach. I encourage everybody to come down here, support the beach. And my son's coming down next month for the concerts. I mean, Ocean City's got it going on down here. It's mob with people, lots of pretty girls, lots of families, rides are all up, the food's all happening, Thrasher's on the boardwalk. Still no ketchup there, but I'll talk to Les about that. Signing off from Ocean City. We'll be back for more. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Ocean City, Mako, and Baltimore Positive.